Every once in a while, I give a talk on some implications on relationships that spiritual practice can bring, both looking for a relationship and being in a relationship. I'm not going to give like the Buddha's teachings on relationships per se, in the sense that the Buddha was, he was celibate, and he left his home to start his practice and then to lead monks, and then to teach nuns, the order of nuns. But he, in terms of romantic relationships, there's it would be a distortion to say that the Pali Canon goes into a great detail about that, but there is, of course, the lay practitioner's teachings, which, if you want to look them up, have a lot of good instructions about just ways to interact with other lay practitioners. But I'm just going to talk about some of the implications of spiritual practice in terms of the way that I've experienced it changing and altering the way I perceive relationships, and some of the teachings in the canon that have some domain over this subject matter. Of course, it's very much, there's nothing unusual about the want, ati in Pali, A-T-T-H-I, to have a relationship, to have a partner, close, good friends. And there's nothing particularly unskillful. It's when that want turns into craving, tanha, which means that I feel I cannot find true, lasting happiness without it, that I've turned the corner, that I've changed from it being a healthy or perfectly fine desire to something that's going to cause me suffering, because I'm bringing this quest for true peace and happiness outside of myself, and I'm putting it onto you. And then the question becomes, just thinking in terms of a relationship is sort of a little bit abstract. If we go and we nail it down to, well, what is it we're searching for when we want a relationship, or what is it we feel that we're not getting, the real question becomes, why aren't I giving this to myself? Why am I making my happiness, my sense of fulfillment, my sense of being whole, contingent upon getting it outside of myself? Why do I need somebody to give me the stuff? For example, if I want acceptance, it means that I've not been giving myself true recognition and inner support. I'm trying to get it from somebody else because I've not been doing it. If I'm trying to get support and a feeling that I'm, doing good things in my life, it's because I've not been taking the time to recognize my own accomplishments. Very much one of the Buddhist teachings on proper reflections is sila nusati, kaga nusati, taking time to reflect on the skillful things that we do, to really get in touch with the good feelings that accrue from being useful to others, showing up for life, developing new skills, being generous. Often we don't take the time to get in touch with that feeling of a sense of inner joy. And so we want to get it from someone else. There could be a feeling of wanting to get understanding from other people. And that's because we really haven't been taking the time to step back and see what are the things that I'm doing that really bring me long-term happiness. If I've simply been allowing myself to be dictated by the world, by society, and I'm looking for all my happiness in the things that other people are doing, then I'm going to feel that I really don't know myself, because I'm simply doing what the world is telling me, what other people are telling me. I'm simply, trying to get a lot of friends on Facebook. I'm simply trying to, like the right bands, and I'm simply trying to, get into the same cuisines that other people are into, or whatever, right? So if I'm really allowing these short-term strategies to be the thing where I get my happiness, then I'm going to really feel that I don't know myself. But if I take time and I sit back and I say, the last time that I really felt inner peace, which is Santi Nusati, which is reflections on the things that bring about true lasting sense of happiness in me, if I really can know what I did that brought them about, then I'm getting to know myself. I'm not putting it upon you to really know me. I'm really in touch with, okay, when I, write in my journal and really am honest, or when I show up for my volunteer work, or when I take time off and travel, or whatever it is that I do that brings me lasting peace, if I can find that rather than have it dictated to me by the world, then I'm not going to try to get it from you. I'm already going to know. I'm going to have that understanding. Of course, the real important issue is it's a matter of control. I can't control any of you. Would love to. I really wouldn't. It'd be too much of a pain. If I'm trying to make my happiness, my sense of security, my sense of support contingent upon one person, I'm, after a while, going to try to control them. Because no matter how wonderful I think you are, you're going to do something, you're going to say something, you're going to like something, you're going to, whatever, you're going to do that thing that you do that I don't like, and I'm going to wish you didn't do it because I don't feel supported when you do it. And if I don't have that inner support, that inner acceptance, that inner knowing myself, then I'm going to try to make you
give it to me.
I don't know what that was about. That was a give it to me voice. All right.
Did you hear that? All right.
I'm going to look at some of the things that I said I should talk about, or else I'll just ramble. Oh, okay. So here are some of the questions that people have asked me, and some of my... how can I maintain my individuality in relationships? The question is first, what do we mean by individuality? Or my freedom? What do you mean by freedom? Let's be specific. Thinking in these vague terms, the Buddha never talked in vague terms. He went down and he worked with real core specific feelings, inner states, and he tried to see what we were trying to address. Of course, what craving is it takes an inner feeling and it tries to get it outside in the world, and it tries to fill up this feeling, this need, this lack, by getting something out there. And as the Buddha taught in the Radhapala Sutta, the world is incapable of filling our craving. It can't. It's not big enough. As Ringo Starr said, when Sergeant Pepper's came out, and he was an incredibly rich man, and he had more drugs and women and houses than he could possibly hope for, he said it still wasn't enough. I still felt empty. I still couldn't fill up that sense of not being good enough. So, if it wouldn't work for Ringo Starr, didn't work for John Lennon because he had to do massive amounts of drugs, and I don't care too much about Paul McCartney, so I don't know. wrote terrible lyrics, but I was thinking that it wasn't enough for him either. So, no idea where I'm going with this. Okay, individuality. What do we really mean by that? Are we talking about our hobbies, our pursuits, our art, or are we giving up our foreign movies? What am I giving up? And then the question is, why did I abandon them in the first place? Why do I need your permission? Why am I so willing to give it up and then blame you for it? If I give up something, it is the problem is with me. It's not, nobody can make me give up my love of travel, my love of, Breaking Bad. I love, watch the show religiously. Sons of Anarchy, love that too. Nobody can make me give up my Sons of Anarchy, goddammit. So why? Why would I feel it's up to me to set the boundaries and to know myself, to know what I need, and to state very clearly. And obviously if somebody's going to not allow me to have the things that I need, well, that's not a person that I should be in a relationship with. It's very, I think it's a very important lesson. We shouldn't be willing to sacrifice the things that are the core behaviors that give us true, lasting happiness. So it's really about seeing which specific things I feel that I haven't been doing, and rather than demanding that somebody else hold my hand throughout it, it's about me acknowledging that I've given up something, you know, that I've not been giving myself the things that I need, and about bringing it in, not making it contingent upon your agreement. I can tell you what it is I need to do, but it's up for me to be the author of that. How can I work with tension and criticism and attacks in my relationships? Well, before we go into trying to, and I'm going to talk about communication in a second, but a really important lesson that can be learned in relationships is going to play out in the rest of our lives. In life, there's going to be things that don't go our way. We're going to want acceptance in our art or in our work or in our endeavors, and we're often not going to get it. People are often going to be very critical of the things we do. We're going to often encounter real slights from other people. And so a relationship is a wonderful opportunity to be able to sit with hearing things we don't want to hear. And rather than need running away or changing the other person or attacking to be our primary way of dealing with criticism and with hearing things we don't like, the question becomes, well, can I find a really soft core? You know, a really soft, safe place that I can be with hearing things that I don't like, and how much can I develop the permission for myself not to feel that I need to defend myself immediately? Can I learn how something that you say then comes inside of me and makes me so uncomfortable that I have to react? That's an internal process. Your words are what the Buddha called the first arrow. I'm being shot with the first arrow here. You never do, you don't want to do the things that I want to do. I do all the things that you want to do. That's not true. But what's going on there? What got tight in the body? What breath changed? How did the body suddenly become so small that those words, immediately I needed to defend myself? How did I become so uncomfortable that I couldn't sit and breathe and be with that for a second and just hear it? Now, this brings me to communication. Lots to say in that. The first gift of communication skills in relationships, after, of course, getting to know ourselves and really knowing that we're very subjective beings. Buddha said that we're constantly filtering reality through karma, which means our previous actions, the previous thoughts, the previous things that we've done completely create a subjective interpretation of the world. Our perceptions are skewed by all of the things. If we grow up with a very distant, cold father, we'll go into relationships with men either wanting to make that up or to prepare ourselves or protect ourselves. And there'll be, the Buddha said, the first manifestation of karma is in vedana, gut feelings. That's the way karma first arrives. So if I'm used to men being cold and distant and judgmental, when I go into an important interaction with another guy, there might be this subtle tension that's creating a level of defensiveness that I'm not even aware of, that I bring into my relationships. And the question becomes, can I release and relax that vedana? Can I breathe into my body formation and bring myself to a state of peace so I can really hear what's being said, not from a defensive posture? The second most important point with communication is, of course, pausing. The gift of being able to find the breath, no matter how much I want to react immediately, no matter how false I think the facts you're saying to me are, no matter how unfair I think you're being, if I can first find something inside to give me just enough of a pause that I'm not reacting, I'm responding. What's the difference? Responding, I've always got an alternative. I've always got a choice. I can always yell or not yell. I can always defend myself or not defend myself. I can always ask you to repeat and clarify, or I can... There's choices. Reaction, there's no choice. I don't know what the alternative is. I'm just saying the first thing that comes into my mind, and I am incapable of articulating to myself an alternative thing to say or do. So if I can just grab onto the breath or the body long enough that I can develop two choices and choose between at least those two choices, I'm no longer in reactivity, I'm in responding. It's interesting, neuroscientists like Benjamin Libet believe that the only role that consciousness plays is to stop us from saying and doing stupid things. All of our impulses start unconsciously, but the role of consciousness is to stop us, to edit us, to hit the stop button. And the only way we can do that is by first breathing and pulling back just for long enough that we don't go with the first thing that arises in the mind. So that's pausing. Really, one of the most important skills I've learned from Buddhist practice is the art of listening, which the Buddha talks about a lot. We tend to listen entirely for facts. And when we're in deep, important discussions with loved ones or family members, we tend to hyperfixate on the facts. So if I say to you, you know, you never call me, the first thing that will jump into my mind is, but that's totally untrue. I called you just the other... I called you last Wednesday. You weren't there, but I called you. So we want to immediately go to the facts. And really, the most important ability is to really let go of the facts and to really hear what the feelings that are being conveyed by the other person. It doesn't mean that I'm agreeing with your facts if I focus on your feelings. It doesn't mean that at all. If you say to me, you never call, and I respond, what I hear you're saying is that you don't feel appreciated. It doesn't mean that I'm agreeing with anything that you've said. It doesn't mean that I agree that you're unappreciated or that I never call, but it means I've heard what you're trying to say. It means I've really heard that you're trying to convey a feeling that you're not appreciated. And so if I say, this is what I hear you saying, it doesn't mean yes, no, agreement, non-agreement. It means that I've been present, I've given you space to express what's going on, and I've honored what you've said by affirming that I've heard it. So I try to not go to the facts at all. Because I find that that's the one thing that makes arguments never end. So I tell you, I've been married for a long time. If I go into the facts, it'll never be over. Never be over. Because you can always change the framework. Well, 7 years ago. Yeah, well, fuck you. 11 years ago. How far do we frame it? I mean, you can extend the frame forever. So the facts are pointless. What is, though, important is conveying that you're hearing the feelings and then saying, well, hearing that feeling, this is what I can do. This is, and what I can do is not based on an agreement or an obligation. It's more a statement of I can try, I can endeavor, my goal can be, rather than I'm going to call you up every Wednesday. That's or whatever. That's not a solid solution. Is I've heard you felt unappreciated. I heard you feel that I don't care about your needs. And what I can do is open up to that and see if I can bear that in mind so that I can try to bring that into mind as I plan my days. And that's all that I'm safe to really offer. If I start saying I'm going to, you know, in my experience, I should say, this is all from my experience, the Buddhist practitioner, but if I start going into solid promises, the moment I don't live up to them, it's just... the whole thing has been lost. But if I really open up to the feelings, acknowledge you, give you a safe space, don't interrupt you, even if you're saying something that I don't like. That's one of the wonderful things if you've been there to Occupy Wall Street. The human microphone is fun. But what's really great is they allow everybody to speak. And nobody is allowed to boo. If you don't like what you're hearing, you go like this. Don't do this while I'm talking. But if you don't like what you're hearing, you go like this. You don't boo, you don't stop, you don't shout somebody down. And if you like what you're hearing, you do this. And it's really moving because everybody has a safe, all the work groups have a safe space to talk and to address. And that's really what we want in relationships. Even if we don't agree with what the other person is saying, the safety, the opportunity to speak is so important, and to know that you've been heard is so essential. So essential. It reminds me of during the retreats, very often when I met and talked with some members of the transgender community, just how important it was for them to be heard and be witnessed. That can be so important, just to be really, really heard by somebody else. So we don't have to agree, just really repeating back. Finally, the Buddha taught right speech, this is in terms of communication, and right speech is more than just making sure what we say is true. We tend to hyperfixate on that, to use the word hyperfixate too many times in one talk. What's wrong with fixate anyway? I don't know why I have to make it hyper. Even to focus on the truth. And of course, the Buddha said the truth is very important. He said the one person he wouldn't talk to was somebody who was a habitual liar, because that person really couldn't honestly see where they were causing harm and not. But the other important valuations to go into right speech are making sure that it's useful, what we're saying. Really, does this really help? Does it really need to be said by me? And that's really important in relationships. Really tempting in a relationship with a best friend, a lover, or, you know, your mother, to be, I have to be the one to tell them that they're not eating right. I have to be the one to tell them that they don't have a spiritual program. I have to be, because God damn it, I'm the one all there. No, actually, what the hell does that sound? Somebody like Hare Krishna. That's right.
Is that the weird, was that a phone sound?
Yeah.
Wow, it would be like the last sound I would choose for my phone. The sort of jingle bells, that they weren't metallic, but they were sort of wood. all right. Just getting over that. All right. So right. That's fine. I don't care if the phone's gone. Right speech is really about, do I need to be the one to say, and does it have to be said right now? Is this really the opportunity? The Buddha and his teachings of the Number Discourses has a whole teaching about knowing the situation you're in and really knowing if it's the right time or you're the right person. Is the karma between you and this person so complex that they're not going to be able to hear it? Sometimes the person we're closest to is the last person that can hear the truth from us and really work with it. Even though we might feel, oh my God, you're drinking yourself to death, and I have to be the one. Sometimes, because there's such a complex relationship, there's so much defensiveness going on, there's so much history of attack or whatever that we're working through, that I'm not the one, you're not the one to bring the message. That's what the Buddha called equanimity, knowing when, you know, we really believe that our message is true, it's useful, but we really have to know, hey, wait a second, is there somebody else that could carry this? Am I, just by being who I am and having this history with this person, going to make it not work? So we have to open to that. What can we do to grow with others? A lot of people say, well, I'm now on the spiritual path and I want my loved one. What can I do to make them a Buddhist? Don't make anybody Buddhist. Please don't make anybody Buddhist. It's really exciting when you first stumble upon a spiritual path. It's like when you really want everybody to join it, and it's the worst thing that you can do. Don't proselytize. Don't try to be the Buddha in relationships. It's really important, though, to find other spiritual practitioners to share as much as you can about your frustrations in life and your unhappiness and anything, your frustrations with work. If you try to have one person be the repository of all your suffering, they will be overburdened because they've got their own suffering and stress too. And that's the problem with too many relationships, is that when people fall into families and fall into really tight relationships, there's a temptation to just tell everything to that one person. And all we do is set ourselves up for suffering when there comes a time when that person is not able to contain or listen. They're too busy, they're too stressed out, they got too much going on, and then what will we do with our suffering? What will we do with our confusion? We need to have a support group. Everybody needs a support group. We all need more than one person to share our confusion, our doubt, our frustrations, our self issues, whatever. And if we try to have it be that one person, or we overburden one person, we are setting ourselves up for disappointment. So it's really important to share the muck. Share the muck. So let me see if I've covered all the questions that mentioned in relationships. Oh, finally, my favorite question. Was going to forget this one. Very briefly, where is the magic? I'm not feeling the magic. What's going on? Where's that magic? Where did the magic go? Sounds like a bad 70s song. Where did the magic go? Phil, write that up. Write that up. Go home right now. Where did the magic go? Bad 70s.
You want that funky.
Yeah. You know, remember, how long has this been? That feel. Give me that.
I'm going to go for it's great.
You know that story about Samuel Beckett? He's walking in the park with his translator, and the translator says, "Oh, it's a beautiful day." And Beckett says, "Yes." And the translator goes, "Yeah, the kids are running around, it's warm, it's the first day of spring." And Beckett nods, and the translator says, "It's just a beautiful day." And Beckett nods, and the translator says, "Yeah, it makes you glad to be alive." And Beckett goes, "I wouldn't go that far." So magic is the spark of excitatory neurotransmitters like dopamine and adrenaline. And it's a temporary thing. It generally is released in the first couple of months. It is never going to be a thing that's lasting. So if you expect that magical, sparkly, excitatory state of, wow, all my problems went away, I met Mr. Miss Wright, not going to happen. Not meant to last, meant to reward you for having sex. It's a survival thing of the species. And the real feelings of love, companionship, noticed by the releases of vasopressin and oxytocin, which you knew, of course, are inhibitory. They are peaceful, releasing. Ah, they're not, woohoo! Chico! Chico! It's this feeling of being at home, it's peaceful, it's not suddenly making all your problems go away. You're aware that you still have bills to pay. You're aware that your job still sucks. You're aware that your roommate is not picking up the towels. You are aware of what's going on in your life. When we're in the magic, when everything else starts blurring away, when we found that magical, oh, you know, it's, and this is the solution for everything, that's not going to last. Not their fault. It's not in them if they didn't spark the magic. It was in you to begin with. It's a neurotransmitter thing. You can use it if you want to be an indicator of lust and attractiveness, but it's not an indicator of the real core things that's going to make a relationship work in the long term. So when it goes away, it doesn't mean that suddenly they become Mr. or Mrs. Wrong. It simply means that neurotransmitters that were never meant to last have, in fact, stopped lasting. So I've talked myself to breath, magically overcome irritable bowel syndrome, and led a meditation in one evening. So I thank you all for listening. Just a couple of quick questions, and I'm going to talk with Eric for a little while after this. So I thank you for your attention.
I have a question on communication. Because I think we all say, oh, you didn't call, or, I mean, I just said it to someone the other day.